next level and what that looks like and what that entails. And it's not what you think. It's not necessarily standing down front or spinning or jumping up and down or anything like that that we think extreme worship is, although that can be what it looks like. But it's so much of the simple and the basic things. We're going to be in three different portions of Scripture, not today, but in our study. I don't know how far we'll go. That was a significant word that was released just now, guys. That was significant just now that was released. I want us to get, when we have these God moments in our life, I want us to recognize the moment and recognize the uniqueness of the moment and the potential of the moment. Litmus test for everybody in here. The story I'm not going to call it a little story. It's the biggest story in that guy that got saved in Auckland's life. But I want to litmus test for you guys. When you got that phone call from the guy that stole all of your stuff and said, "I want to meet you," and all of that stuff, how many of y'all would have the sheriff with you when you met him? You would just have Gordon. He'd be packing with like 8 different firearms. But so often we'll approach something like that with that mindset and we'll totally miss the godness of the moment. We'll totally miss the God, unique God moment in the moment. And I want us to get to where our first thought is not, "I'm going to call 911, we're going to set this joker up, we're going to get him, or either I'm going to take care of it myself." But our first thought is not that, but our first thought is, "God, this has got to be you. Because there's no way a criminal is going to risk jail, much less give back the stuff that he went to the effort of stealing, unless this is a God moment." And TW, I want us to get and understand all of these God moments in our life. And our life is a series of these wonderful encounters and interaction with God. And I want us to be more sensitive and more aware of these things. And that's one of my things in worship that we'll eventually get to. I like to plow on Wednesday nights, so we'll probably do a lot of plowing in this stuff on Wednesday nights next several weeks. But I want us to get that, Robin, because we go through life and golly, we miss all of these little moments. We miss all of these what ifs and all of these little opportunities to share grace and to share love and not only share it but experience it for ourselves. You know, I told y'all Wednesday night as we came back, and I did some teaching Wednesday night, and I'll try not to talk too much about the worship conference that we went to and all of that stuff. But there are two things that really left a mark on me more than Amanda Cook or Stephanie Gretzinger or Jeremy Riddle or any of these guys, and I love them all. They're tremendous. I love their heart. I love the way that they minister to people just on a regular basis. If you don't love people and don't really love God, you can't do this Christian thing. If it's just a thing of, "I'm in this to see how it benefits my life, how it comes in and accentuates my life," you're going to totally miss it. You're going to totally miss it. Totally miss it. And two things that just really, I made some notes on, I'm trying to journal more and write stuff down and fill these notebooks up with stuff that God's speaking to me. The most extreme or beautiful worship that I saw all weekend was not from the spinning lady or any young people that might resemble a mosh pit or anything like that. They didn't have a mosh pit, but it was anything that might resemble that. They would say, "That is radical worship." The thing that struck me the most, Brett, is we had the opportunity. We were sitting about 10 or 15 rows behind Bill Johnson, right behind all the Bethel people and all that stuff. And we were sitting about 10 or 15 rows from behind Bill and Benny. And I saw it on two different times, and God just moved on me and moved me to tears both times on it when I saw it. And I leaned over to Lori, and I was like, "That's awesome." And you've got 6,000 people there because of their connection to the Bethel family and the worship experience through Bethel music and all of that stuff. And Bill's the father of all of this. He's the father of this movement and God's expression on that right now in earth. He's sixth generation, so he's not the original patriarch, but he's the father right now in God's expression. And on two different occasions, as we're about to begin to just engage God and the energy and the passion and all of that stuff, I saw a grandchild come up to him. And nothing else in the room mattered in that moment. When he picked up that grandchild, one time it was a teenage granddaughter, but when he picked up that grandchild and he began to engage them and begin to communicate with them and love on them and kiss them, I say, one of his grandkids, he couldn't kiss her enough. And I'm like, I'm just sitting there just saying, like, that's the most pleasing worship before the Father than anything else that's going to happen in this room over the next 3 hours. And I was so moved by that, and God began to teach me about worship and speak to me about worship. And worship is about this, but it's not always about this. If I can't love her well, then this is a farce. If I can't love them well, then this is a lie. If I can't love you well, I think in one portion of Scripture he says, how can you love God who you have not seen when you don't love your brother who you have seen? I'm pretty sure that's in there. And I want us to get the depth of what worship looks like. I want us to understand worship and really get it. This will be an expression of that. I'm not letting you off the hook because you have no expression, outward expression in your life. I believe you're going to have outward expression in your life. I believe that's a given. You're going to have outward expression in your life. But I want us to understand it and have all of these, the depth of all of this stuff. I was very conflicted last weekend as we were in downtown L.A. and downtown L.A. I mean, we walked everything. I parked my car and didn't crank it again didn't get it out of parking for, 4 days. Los Angeles has the highest homeless population in the United States. Highest population of homeless people in the U.S. 13,000 homeless people live in L.A. right now. 13,000. That's a lot. That's a lot. And I had this conflict of celebrating life with my wife and walking two blocks to get breakfast. And in the process, I walk by how many people asleep in a doorstep. And I had this conflict of spending $35 for breakfast for the two of us. Personally, I don't see how people live out there, but from the cost of living. But spending $35 for breakfast for the two of us and then walking by somebody, and I'm thinking, how will $35 change their life? And we gave some of them food, and we gave some of them money, and some of those things and everything. But I want us to get, what does worship look like to God? That's the reason I say that, not to make you feel guilty. Because I would walk, and I would see some people, and I knew they were there for the worship conference. I walked by one alley, and there were two guys talking to a homeless guy. And I overheard one of them say, he said, that's not who you are. That's the phrase I heard as I went by. He said, that's not who you are. Did that look more like worship to God than 6,000 people doing this? I say yes to both. And so I want us to have this depth, this underlying tone in our life that our expression is built on or is released out of, okay? I don't want you to be in a place of superficial when everything's good. I want you to be solid, and I want you to be a pillar, and I want your life to be this life of beautiful expression of worship, no matter what the picture looks like. I was flipping through the TV for a few minutes last night, just kind of having just some down time before I went up and studied and really engaged the Lord, and course, it's Saturday afternoon, so I'm flipping through some college football games. And I stopped for a minute at the LSU game. They were playing Troy, getting beat by Troy. And Errol's always been an LSU fan, and we've enjoyed the stuff of the program and all of that. And about, it looked like about 70,000 of the fans had already gone, already left. In Tiger Stadium on Saturday night. I've been in Tiger Stadium on Saturday night, paid $125 per ticket to get into Tiger Stadium on Saturday night with 103,000 other crazy rabid fans. But because their team wasn't performing and because they were getting beat by Troy, it looked like 60 or 70,000 of them, I don't know how many, but I guarantee you it was half empty, had left, vacated. Vacated. That's what our expression of worship looks like when things are tough in our life. Okay? Because I sit here and I'm like, man, that ain't a true fan. Come on. You might come back. And then if you don't, that's your team, right? But that's often what the expression of our worship looks like. If we're beating Bama the week before or whoever, you fill in the blank, people are foaming at the mouth. Pounding on the concrete side of the wall. And when everything's going good in our church and everything's going good in our life, you can't beat us. But what about when the world kicks you in the teeth? What about when it seems like God let you down? What about when people hurt you? What about when you hurt others? That door swings both ways. What does worship look like then? And I want us to be a people that are unmovable, that are unshakable, that are so full of trust, so full of hope, so full of love, so full of joy that it transcends. Probably the greatest story we have of Paul is him and Silas in the jail. When we think of David coming in 2 Samuel 6. That and Goliath, that's the two stories that we think about. I guarantee you, I come in and I say, tell me what your story of David is that you remember. You ask me, what's your story on Job? One statement, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. That's what worship looks like. And I want us to get it. I want it to be a lifestyle in my commitment to my family, in my commitment to my home, in my commitment to everything I do. I want us to get all of these layers. I want us to get all of these layers. So I want to throw out a few things this morning. Basically, all I'm going to do this morning is I'm going to give you an outline this morning. So this probably won't be something that you walk away and say, wow, that was the most awesome sermon I ever heard or anything like that. I just want you to walk out saying, God touched me today. I've also learned something in 29 years of ministry is you guys forget what I preach. Yeah, y'all do. I do. And I was listening to podcasts this week, from Victory Podcast, with Nick last Sunday and all of that stuff. And I said, man, that was good. I texted him. I said, that was a good word, brother, and all that stuff. And then an hour later, maybe God was checking me. He said, what was it Nick preached on? And so I was pulling up all these flash points. Okay, I remember this, and I remember this, and I remember this, and I remember this. But the greatest thing is the undercurrent of his presence. And when we experience that, then the moments will So let's come turn to 2 Samuel 6. I want to just throw out a couple things and lay a little bit of outline, and then we'll hit this Wednesday night. Okay, guys? It's an amazing day outside. I want you, when you leave this place, to do something outside. Can everybody do that? Everybody do something outside today. Just to feel it on your face. Just to see the sunshine. See His creation. Enjoy Him in that. If it's sitting in your lounge chair on your back porch, that's awesome. But do something to feel that and to see that. Because worshiping Him in that and letting that flow over you and fall on you is just as significant as jumping down, up and down right here. They're all good and they're all powerful. But let's get this. 2 Samuel 6. I want to read this this story very quickly. Very familiar story with us. There are three points, that places that God really carried me to on elevating our worship to the next level. We may be bringing out some stuff like Isaiah 6 and all of that that I brought out earlier. But the three places are going to be 2 Samuel 6, Luke 7, which is the story of the sinful woman that came before Jesus and busted the party at Simon the Pharisee's house. We're going to look at that, and then we're going to look at John 12, perhaps one of my favorite portions in all of Scripture, John 12, where Mary comes and she worships Jesus, and she's got some things set aside. So those are the three things that we're going to look at. I want us to ask a couple questions right here. What does pure worship look like? Pure worship, what does it look like? Now this is Sid, this is not any great teacher or anything like that. This is just me. It's a condition of the heart and a purpose of the will. I don't think that you can have true worship, pure worship, without both. It's a condition of the heart and a purpose of the will. A purpose of the will sometimes is the hardest thing. We withhold from God because of, you fill in the blank. And so it negates the purpose of the will. The purpose of the will is David saying, I'm bringing the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem. The purpose of the will is the sinful woman. Y'all all remember that story? Jesus is having dinner at Simon the Pharisee's house. She hears that Jesus is there. And she said, this is an opportunity for me to approach Him in an intimate setting. Most scholars would say that she was a prostitute. And she said, I can come and I can approach Him, not when there's 5,000 people thronging Him, but when He is in a casual, intimate place. And I can approach Him in that moment. A lot of times it's important to know, recognizing the moment and how to approach God in the moment. We as husbands have been getting that wrong for thousands of years. I want to approach my... Really? Right now? You know what kind of day I've had? You want to be all romantic with me right now? You need to get a reality check, dude. We don't recognize the moment. But then sometimes we'll be so busy with this or whatever, we miss opportunity. Okay? And this woman recognized that there was a moment. There was a time, there was an evening where I can come in and I can, I'm not worried about the consequences. I'm not worried about what people are going to say. I'm not worried about Simon or his guards that might be there or anything like that. I'm not worried about the religious people. This is an opportunity to me approach God, to approach Jesus. And she brings very precious ointment just like Mary did in John 12, and she begins to anoint Him and worship Him. She was doing this at the beginning of His ministry, announcing something. Mary was doing it at the end of His ministry, announcing something. She recognized the moment. It was a purpose of the will. And then we look at Mary in John 12. And when they're scolding her, because you remember she broke the alabaster box that was filled with spikenard and all the ointment and all that. Everybody got that? I remember that story when Jesus is at the dinner party that Lazarus is at. And she comes in, and Martha's serving, and Mary's doing her usual thing. She's loving on Jesus. And she comes in and she breaks this alabaster box. Many will say that the cost of the alabaster box was as much as the anointment. But we won't even get into all of that teaching. But she did this, and she got scolded by the disciples. Not the religious crowd, but by the disciples scolded her. The church people that she was in covenant with scolded her. And they said, man, we could have sold all this money, or sold this for all this money. And these people that are sleeping in the doorways, we can get them out of their homeless situation. This is a waste of resources. You know what Jesus' response was? He said, leave her alone. He said, against the day of my burial, she has kept this. So she had been keeping this and storing this and saving this for a moment just like this. What are you storing up for a specific moment? What are you storing up for a specific moment? That one's deep. Y'all can chew on that in a while. What are you storing up for a specific moment in spiritual? And when that moment is there, will you recognize it and seize it? So I put on here that it's a condition of the heart and it is a purpose of the will. And I want you to get both. There's got to be the purpose of the will, Cynthia. Because your heart can be good and you can love God and all of that stuff, but you can be paralyzed in inactivity for whatever reason. I think Aaliyah hit the nail on the head right here earlier about some of us are afraid to come to God because we said, I've forfeited that. I have forfeited that. And our heart wants to be reconciled to Him. But the purpose of the will is negated because of the lies of the enemy. And we recognize those moments, those God moments, and we pour into them and we seize them and we let them do what they're supposed to do in our lives. Cool story for me right quick. When I got out there and I sat down Thursday evening, first night, sit down Thursday evening after we had a hour worship set and we come in and Jen Johnson gets up there and she begins to speak and the first thing she did, she says, I want us to come in, and she says, we have to rebuke or disagree with the lies of the enemy. And you know what she said? She said, you know what the enemy tells me? And this is Jen, her and Brian, head of Bethel Worship. Global, huge global right now. She said, you know what the lies of the enemy to me are right now? That if you love people better and you led better, people wouldn't leave you. She said, I have to come in right now and I have to quit believing that lie. Guess who that was to? Right out the gates. God said, okay, you could have waited till the last, you know, I said, you could have waited till the last night on that one. Very first spoken thing that came out was the lie of the enemy. If you led better and loved people better, they wouldn't leave you. And what I'm saying in that is there are these God moments when God is speaking to us. And it doesn't matter if there's 6,000 people or 200 people or 20 people. God will speak something, and it might be through Robin Trentham. It might be a Robin House. It might be through Aaliyah Kent. It might be through Pastor Sid. It might be whoever. It might be through a child. And He will say something, and it is to penetrate you in that moment. And worship, now listen to this, worship is what is birthed out of those moments. Worship's what's birthed out of those moments. A couple more things and I'm going to tie it up for the morning. I put worship is a proper recognition of three things. This is as the Holy Spirit spoke this to me. Worship is a proper recognition of three things. Without them, this is like baking a cake. If you ain't got milk, eggs, and flour, you ain't baking a cake. I guess they can make a flourless cake. I've had some of those are pretty good, but for the most part, bacon as we know it in the South. You got to have certain ingredients. And I believe that worship is a proper recognition of three things. The first thing that I believe, and we're not going to teach all these, I'm just giving you the groundwork. The first thing is a proper recognition of the moment. That's what I was just talking about. It's a proper recognition of the moment. If you fail to miss the moment, you're going to miss the opportunity for worship. If you fail, it's a proper recognition of the moment. We'll dive and tear into all of these three things in detail. But if you fail to recognize the moment, how many of you thought you were just coming to church on Sunday morning today at Victory because that's what you do? That's my responsibility. That's my duty. I was raised to go to church. It's the right thing to do, so I'm going to show up. Or how many of you came in and I said, this is a corporate encounter with God? It's a corporate encounter with God. And God's going to rock my world. And God's going to rock somebody else's world. And there might be a visitor that comes in that has such a specific need that they can only get in this moment in this house. And they are here by design, by divine design, divine opportunity. There are things that I can only get in this house. I'm going to say that again. You know why? Does it mean we're better than any other place? No, but this is where God's planted me. There are things I can only get at home. There are things I can only get at my mama's house. When I go to my mama's house, there is stuff there that is nowhere else to be found on this planet. I only get it there. And so I recognize this is a moment. I flew to L.A. last week because there's things I could only get in that moment, in that place. So I made the investment to do it in mine and Lori's life. I recognize the moment, proper recognition of the moment. The next thing that we have to properly recognize is who God is. I think we fail miserably in this. We don't rightly see God. We see God's expression on His people, and it's mixed results on that. Because when I see God's expression on Sia, then sometimes it's good and powerful. And if I'm performing well and doing a good job and bringing a good sermon, then it's like, woo, God's awesome. But what if I'm getting beat by Troy? No offense if any of you are Troy alumni. What if I'm getting beat by Troy and I'm God's expression to you? So you're not properly seeing who God is. You're just seeing God's expression through one of His sons that may or may not be doing well right now. And so, Tyler, if you're looking, you're not properly seeing who He is. If this is God's expression to you explicitly, then you're not rightly seeing who God is. If it's through your favorite TV preacher or podcast preacher or whoever. So we have to rightly recognize who God is in order to be people of true worship. There's a song right now that's just rocking my world, and I know I'm getting on Lori's nerves, but I walk around and I play it on my iPhone all the time around the house. And it's the name of it is So Will I. It's a Hillsong song. I love Amanda Cook's version, but it's a Hillsong song. And it's So Will I, and it talks about as He spoke, 100 billion things came to life. And as He spoke, 100 billion galaxies were birthed. As He spoke, 100 billion creatures captured His breath. As He spoke, the waves began to, the constant crashing on the seashore, the constant blowing of the wind and all of these things. That is beginning to recognize who God is, guys. We bring Him so down to our level I think the fallacy of the faith movement is we come in, and rightly so, we have elevated our position to a place of beloved status, and we're correct in doing so. But what we're incorrect in doing is bringing Him down to our place. Instead of elevating us up to a place of being beloved, we brought Him down to our level to where we equate Jesus to Brett. And we lose awe, and we lose honor. We lose wonder. We lose wonder. We lose wonder of Him. We lose wonder of His creation. We lose wonder of the things that He speaks that just jumps out of His mouth, Kenny. And it didn't just stop in Genesis, guys. He's still speaking things. So it's proper recognition of who He is. And then the third thing that we must, in order for pure worship, what does pure worship look like? It's a proper recognition of who we are. Isaiah was like, woe is me, for I'm a man of unclean lips, for my eyes have seen the King. And this was the greatest prophet on the planet at this time. And he's like, no, I'm nothing compared to Him, because I rightly see Him, and that makes me rightly see myself. And when we rightly see and understand who we are, and that is not a shame thing, that is not a thing of us coming in and beating ourselves up and all that stuff, it's realizing that the opposite is realizing I am a trophy of grace. I am beloved. I am a son of the Most High. I do recognize all these things. I see myself as flawed humanity. I see myself warts and all. I see myself in my frailty, but in that I see His strength and I see His glory. And when we recognize those three things, that brings us into a place of worship. Man, I don't know if I need to go any further today. I'm going to go ahead and close this because I'll get crazy if I get going in this. Let's read just a couple verses. What time is it, somebody? 12:17. Thank you, Stephen. We're about to wind this puppy up. Starting verse 12. And it was told King David, saying, the Lord hath blessed the house of Obed-Edom and all that pertaineth unto him because of the ark of God. So David went and brought up the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom into the city of David with gladness. And it was so that when they that bare the ark of the Lord had gone six paces, he sacrificed oxen and fatlings. And David danced before the Lord with all his might, and David was girded with a linen ephod. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the trumpet. And as the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, Michal, Saul's daughter, looked through a window and saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord. And she despised him in her heart. A lot of Michal's problems was her perspective. You know where she was supposed to be? She was supposed to be leading the women, welcoming them into the city. But she was from sitting up in her palace from her elevated spot and looking down and saying that this is... Worship looks weird if you're not in the middle of it. Looks very awkward if you're not in the middle of it. Intimacy looks awkward if you're not in the middle of it. But when we're in the middle of the worship, everything changes. It's just an observation. She's looking from the wrong place. It says, and she despised him in her heart, and they brought in the ark of the Lord and set it in his place in the midst of the tabernacle that David had pitched for it. David offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. And as soon as David had made an end of offering burnt offerings and peace offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord of hosts. And he dealt among all the people, even among the whole multitude of Israel, as well to the women as men, to everyone a cake of bread, a good piece of flesh, and a flagon of wine. So all the people departed, everyone to his house. Then David returned to bless his household, and Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, how glorious was the king of Israel today, who uncovered himself today in the eyes of the handmaidens of his servants, as one of the vain fellows shamelessly uncovereth himself. And then I'm going to read verse 21. To me, this is the whole crux of the story, because we see everything in this. And David said unto Michal, it was before the Lord, which chose me before thy father, and before all his house to appoint me ruler over the people of the Lord over Israel. Therefore will I play before the Lord. And I will yet be more vile than thus, and I will be base in mine own sight. And of the maidservants which thou hast spoken of them shall I be had in honor. Verse 21 tells us everything we need to know about this story. He comes in, and I've always had this misconception, I feel like a misconception, about why David was not in his kingly garments. I have marveled, and we have talked about how free David was in his worship. And I've said, Amy, I've said, "Ooh, boy, David was free. Look at that, man." How many of y'all heard somebody say in a sermon, David got so happy before the Lord, he just stripped down his underwear, dancing naked before the Lord. He wasn't naked, but he had on a limb. How many of y'all heard that? Everybody shaking their head? Yeah, I've heard it. I've heard it. I've probably preached that a little bit through the 29 years. I don't think that's the case at all. It was a purpose of the will. David came in, and David realized the significance of the moment that we're bringing this Ark of the Covenant in Jerusalem. He understood the significance of the moment. And he knew that in the significance of this moment, that there is a king present much greater than I. And it would be a direct, I'm not going to say an insult. There wasn't room for two kings in that moment. There wasn't room for two kings in that moment. So you know what he did? He put on priest clothes. That linen ephod was priest clothes. You know what a priest did? A priest served the Lord. So he got everything right in that one moment. He saw the significance of the moment. He rightly saw who God was, and he rightly saw who he was. And most of us would have been putting on our best king's clothing and said, "Man, we want to show what it looks like for a king to worship a king." And he understood there wasn't room in that moment for two kings. Most of us, the problem in our life is we don't recognize that there's not room for two lords in our life. Most of us don't recognize that there's not room for two lords in our life. Because usually he never gets the lordship in my life because I'm doing such a good job at it. And David got all of these things, man. It was a purpose of the will. He recognized who God was, and he recognized who he was. And I love his response to Michal. He said, "I didn't uncover myself before the people. I uncovered myself before God." And true worship makes you vulnerable before God. That ushered in freedom. The expression birthed out of this was wild leaping and dancing and worship before God. It was how many of y'all remember the six-step shuffle sermon? That's good. Six-step shuffle. Take six steps, stop, sacrifice something. Six steps, stop, sacrifice something. Some scholars said they did this all the way into Jerusalem. It was like an 8 or 10 mile thing. I don't know if that's the case or if they just did it this once and then did it when they got there. But I do know this. There was so much sacrifice that took place. You look at some of Dake's studies and this and all. There was so much sacrifice that took place. Where do y'all think all the meat came from that he gave everybody? That was the result of so much sacrifice. Just a little side note on this and I'm done. Is it when you come in and you really sacrifice before the Lord, there will be enough of residual that everybody around you will be blessed. It doesn't bankrupt you. As I get deeper in worship and I get deeper in sacrifice, there'll be enough. There'll be so much residual that not only will my household be blessed, but everyone around me. That's what this. Y'all read verse 21. Everything's covered in that. Worship team, I'm going to ask y'all to come up. I want us to spend a moment of meditation. I want us to spend a moment of meditation. What God's done and what God said. We talk about taking back things that were stolen from us. I want to take back meditation. New Age kind of captured that one from us. Y'all go ahead and stand to your feet. Can y'all do so? Will I? I'm just kidding. You just sent that out to them this week. Soon. I want you to take a moment and I want you to look at your life, not anybody else's. Don't look at anybody else's. Don't look at your spouse. Don't look at your kids. Don't look at other people in this room or people that are not in this room. But I want you to look at your life and ask yourself, what does my life of worship look like? If it's just a life of occasionally doing this when they sing Hit Your Song List, man, God sees that for what it is. Maybe it's a life in an alleyway declaring over somebody, but that's not who you are. That's a life of worship. Maybe it's focusing on, in the midst of everything else going on, the significance of the moment of your grandchild coming to you or just holding her in your arms, singing and declaring the significance of that moment. This week, I want you to start seeing the God moments. You say, brother, it's all God moments. I'm talking about those unique things when it's like heaven pauses on a moment. Maybe it's an opportunity for somebody that stole from you. And you've got two choices. You can either call 911 in your heart. I'm not even talking about physical. In your heart, you can choose 911 or you can choose coffee shop. I'm not even talking about physical. I'm talking about forgiving somebody in your heart. Some of you are in prison because you can't forgive somebody that did you wrong. You know what worship is in that moment? Choosing the coffee shop. I'm talking about in the emotional. I'm not even talking about in a physical encounter this week. I'm just talking about that. What are your thoughts about me this week? What are your thoughts about Bob? What are your thoughts about her? When she just so infuriated the night before. And you can either call 911 and be justified in that. Oh, justice! Or you can come in and say, I choose coffee shop. I choose coffee shop. Just spend a moment for Him. Go ahead, guys. Go ahead. Let's just soak in Him for a second.